3. Dark Imperium. Chapter 6. Administrator General Io Bhattacharya runs down the corridor. Her heart is thudding. She feels stress hormones coursing through her system, just as they have been for the last few weeks. She has not slept for a long time, not properly. When she has a rare pause in rushing around, she holds her hand to her face and sees it shaking. She reaches the slide doors and punches the code. Inside is the Sector Coordination Chamber. There are several hundred people there already, more than it was ever designed to accommodate. They are shouting. Many look like they're coming to blows, and there are shoving matches over tables. She pushes through them, looking for Makard. Ducking past a furious-looking man with a torn jerkin, she spies him in earnest conversation with Windib. She makes her way towards them, swerving around more clusters of scared, angry people. Makard sees her coming and gives her a weary smile.
"You got back, Io," he says,
coming to embrace her. She nods, noticing his stale aroma as he puts his big arms around her. That's not his fault. They've been stuck in these airless rooms for a long time. Windib nods at her curtly. She is not the hugging kind. Makard gives her a concerned look.
"Find anything out?"
Bhattacharya shakes her head.
"All nodes down, just like ours are." She can't stop her voice shaking a little.
It's mostly from exhaustion, but they might mistake it for fear.
"That can't be right," says Windib. "It can't be."
Leonora Windib does not take easily to system failure. She is a creature of the system, her life devoted to ensuring Najan's products are grown, tested, harvested, and transported with maximum efficiency. She has power of life and death over the production carders, something she has exercised more than once, all in the service of system integrity. System integrity is life to her.
"Take a flyer yourself, then," says Bhattacharya, too tired to stay polite. "Try to find a functional node."
Makard calmly places his hand on Windib's.
"We can stop pretending now, I think."
Olav Makard is a reassuringly calm presence. He's a limited man, well-suited to being Magister Technicae, happiest with the engine seers of the big grain vacuums and hoversides out on the high resource. But in these kinds of situations, that's actually welcome. Bhattacharya tries to calm herself down. She moves closer to the other two to keep her words from travelling too far.
"So, this is the situation. Intrasystems comms down. Orbital grid down. Astropaths dead. Defense clusters down, as far as I can see. There might be something working on the far side of the planet, but it would take hours to find out."
Makard's brow creases.
"What could do this?" he muses.
He sees the issue as a technical one and seems almost to take pleasure in its inscrutability.
"Electromagnetic burst? Not likely. Not everything. So what about the astropaths?"
Bhattacharya remembers what it was like in the system local Tower of Sight, that old steel pinnacle just south of the main defense station. She'd been warned not to go into the sanctum by the thralls, but had ignored them. Then she'd vomited. A lot. It turns out there are worse ways to die than being caught up in the blades of an auto-thresher.
"There were dedicated screeds on the auto-typers, just a few," she says. "Mostly standard dream traffic. But then it all started going wrong. I don't understand any of it. One of them had begun drawing. Things... it was all horrible."
Windib is getting impatient.
"News is getting out. We have 50,000 workers in this processor node alone, and once they start to panic..."
"No one's panicking," says Bhattacharya firmly. "Where's Captain Dantine?"
"He couldn't raise a line to the garrison, so he took a crawler over," says Makard. Bhattacharya has a terrible feeling about all of this. It's more than physical. For months now, the nightmares have been terrible, and there's this awful sensation in the pit of her stomach. It started with those first long-range distress calls from the near void, all bleating something about the Astronomicon going out, which was absurd. But the Audex snippets just kept coming. And then the scheduled conveyors never turned up. That hadn't happened on Najan for as long as the records had been kept, more than 2,000 standard years. And then the lights had appeared in the night sky,
first flickers that looked like shooting stars, then ripples of weird green and purple that made it impossible to sleep and somehow got through even blackout shutters. And then the astropaths had started dying, and then the ranged comms had crackled out, and it began to seem very much like the universe was folding up on itself around them.
"Stay here," Bhattacharya says to Windib. "Get some more staff into the overlook units and calm everybody down. Get them going through the emergency protocols one by one."
"It won't do any good."
"It'll give them something to do."
Bhattacharya turns to Makkard.
"You have a crawler docked?"
The Magister Technicae nods.
"We'll take it out. I want to talk to Dantine."
The two of them start to march off, leaving Windib scuttling after them.
"What'll you get from him, Administrator?" she asks querulously. "He's just a soldier."
Bhattacharya swivels on her heel.
"You think we won't be fighting soon?" she hisses. "You think this is something natural? You stupid woman!"
Then she is marching again. Makkard stares at the stricken Windib for a moment, then hurries after her.
"She could have you sanctioned," he says, sounding slightly awestruck.
"Thrown," she says, never looking back. "Scary prospect."
Najan is an agri world. There are templates for such places, drawn up in the fathomless past and never altered by the administratum. All agri worlds are of similar size, located in similar orbital zones within their void systems, and subject to specific exposure to a prescribed spectrum of solar radiation. Their soils have to be within a tight compositional range, and they have to be close to major supply worlds. The Imperium is not a gentle custodian of such places. After discovery of a candidate planet, the first 50 years are spent in terraforming according to well-worn Martian procedures. All pre-existing life is scrubbed from the rocks, either by the application of controlled virus chewers or by timed flame drops. The atmosphere is regulated, first through the actions of gigantic macroprocessors, and thereafter by a land-based network of control units, more commonly referred to as command nodes. Weather, at least as generally understood, disappears. Rainfall becomes a matter of controlled timing, governed by satellites in low orbit, and kept in line by fleets of dirigibles. The empty landscape is divided up into colossal production zones, each patrolled by crawlers and pest-thopters. Millions of base-level servitors are imported, kept at the very lowest level of cognitive function, but bulked up by a ruthless level of muscle binders. Soon after this process completes, every agri-world looks exactly the same, a flat, wind-rummaged plain of high-yield crops swaying towards the empty horizon. A person could walk for days and never see a distinctive feature. Not that anyone sane would choose to walk in such places. The industrial fertilizer dumps are so powerful that they turn the air orange and make it impossible to breathe unfiltered. A single growing season exhausts the soil completely, requiring continual delivery of more sprays of nitrates and phosphates, all delivered from the grimy berths of hovering dispatch flyers. The entire world is given over to a remorseless monoculture, with orthogonal drainage channels burning with chem residue and topsoil continually degrading into a flimsier and flimsier dust. But that doesn't matter. A planet can be driven like this for thousands of years before it eventually keels over and becomes a death world. The quality of the crops gets steadily worse, but the quantity can be sustained almost indefinitely, assuming that supply lines are maintained and imports remain consistent. At the end of every season, the great harvester leviathans are stoked up and dragged from their pens and let loose on the grey fields, smokestacks belching and tracked undercarriages sinking deep. These massive creatures of high-sided metal and intricate pipework, the smallest of which are 100 meters long, crawl across the blasted prairies, sucking up every last speck of pallid grain and piping it directly to antiseptic internal hoppers. Feedlanders come down from high flight, dock with the still-trundling leviathans, and extract the raw material from where it is taken into the city-sized processor vats, blasted with antibiotics, smashed, burned, crushed, then stamped and packaged. Once ready for transport, containers are dragged up into orbit aboard swell-bellied landers, ready for transfer to the void-bound mass conveyors, which deliver the refined product to every starving hive world and forge world in their long circuits.
There is a quaint tradition in the various propaganda departamentos of the administratum of marketing agri-worlds as quasi-paradises, free of the squalor and overcrowding of a standard urban station, and full of bucolic ease. Vidcards are dropped into communal hab-warrens, extolling the virtues of a life lived outdoors, with a son on your back and a ruddy-faced boy or girl, subject to preference, by your side. In reality, life on an agri-world is as unrelenting, back-breaking, and monotonous as the vast majority of other imperial vocations. There are no trees laden with glossy fruit, only kilometre after kilometre of hissing corn. There are no gentle strolls under the warming sun, only punishing work details in rad suits, leaning into the dust-laden winds that howl around the equator with nothing to halt their rampage. Once the new arrivals have made planetfall and found this out, it is too late. Crew transports arrive on agri-worlds full and leave empty. There is a saying among the indentured workers, "You come for the soil, you end up part of it." Najan is no different. Its bulk is taken up exclusively with 7 approved strains of nutrient-enriched grains, overseen by the Central Command Station midway up the Northern Hemisphere. 3 million servitors work the resource, the hyperfields, while little more than 200,000 people, less than the complement of a single spire on a mid-range hive world, control the stock of semi-automated vehicles and monitor the lattice of weather control nodes. There are 3 garrisons housing a few hundred under-trained sub-militarum-grade troopers, an astropath tower, a rudimentary orbital defense grid, a navy station, and a few other dusty offices for the various divisions of the administratum, rarely manned. Najan's quotas are unremarkable, its operations firmly within the expectations of the subsector command. Keeping it that way is hard work, but it is better to keep your head down than invite a visit from the off-world Scrutius Signa Quantitatis, who make Windib look like the soul of levity and carry splinter rifles. But Acharya reflects bitterly on that as Makard's crawler shakes and sways across the short piece of open ground between the command station and Dantine's primary garrison building. The view screens are, as ever, smeared from the endless wind. She is hot, her work habits stained at the armpits and collar. These places are not intended to be properly defensible. Their survival is predicated on rapid response from the system's naval assets, who prowl the void incessantly. All she has ever been required to do is to keep the astropaths happy, maintain a skeleton defense crew to buy a little time if ever required, and keep the comm stations manned. In Najan's 2,000 years of uninterrupted activity, the worst that has taken place is a Xenos raid some 500 years ago. That is legend now, a piece of old news they can laugh about in the canteens. "We're due a naval visit," says Makard, bouncing on the high driver's seat as the crawler lurches along. "They might be able to explain all this." But Acharya smiles bitterly.
"I don't think there'll be a visit."
"There's one due."
"They're not coming, Olav. I don't know if there even is a navy anymore, at least in this subsector."
Makard glances at her, alarmed.
"Throne, though. I don't know, do I?"
She remembers what she saw in the astropath's tower.
"Get us there, quick."
She looks back to where the lights of the command complex are blinking through the dust and wind. It all looks solid enough, a scatter of low-rise hab compounds set about the scaffolds of the main comm tower. The big drop sites are back east, the hangars for the crawlers a few hundred meters away beyond the wind wall. Everything is chipped and blustered, lost in a permanent fog of rad glow and storm clutter. She turns back. The crawler's arc lights flash across a sloped militarum-grade blast wall and a toothed compound gate. Flood lumens have been hoisted up to the parapet level, and for the first time ever, she catches sight of troops in environment suits patrolling up there.
"See that?"
Makard says, nudging the crawler inside as the gates cantilever open. She says nothing. She is beginning to feel more than a little sick. The crawler makes its way to the far side of the compound before shuddering to a halt. Both of them put masks on and tighten their collars, then the doors push open. The cab immediately fills with flying chaff, and they battle their way down to ground level. Dantine is waiting for them, flanked by a few of his staff officers,
all wrapped up in layers of environment swaddling. Dantin comes up to Bhattacharya and salutes.
"Tried to get you on the comm!"
he shouts over the wind's howl.
"All down!" Bhattacharya shouts back. "Can we get inside?"
"Agreed. There's something you should see."
"Am I going to like it?"
Dantin doesn't look like he's smiling.
"Just come inside, Administrator!"
he shouts grimly. Captain Dantin is a better man than he has any right to be. Bhattacharya does not know the full story, but he must have fallen foul of someone in authority somewhere, and if there were any justice, he'd be serving in an Astra Militarum regiment with decent troops under his command. It is unclear how he has ended up on Najan. It seems unlikely he volunteered for the posting. For all that, he has taken to the tasking well. His predecessor was a drunk and a brute, killed in a brawl involving several dozen of his own men. Since Dantin came to replace him, things have calmed down in the barracks. Amasek flows a little less freely, and the uniforms are put on straight. Dantin does not normally order patrols on the battlements. Spending more than an hour or so in the open risks eroding the limited amount of good equipment they possess. So, like most of Najan's human population, the soldiers are mostly kept confined to quarters, or drilled in covered yards. Dantin takes them down into the garrison's lower levels. As they walk, Bhattacharya hears sounds of further activity taking place within the base. Clunks and thuds of heavy equipment being moved. Makard looks uneasy. He finds military types unnerving, despite his physical bulk. They enter a green-walled conference chamber, harshly lit by strip lumens. Four men are seated, but get to their feet as the captain enters. They are in standard fatigues, olive green with flak jackets over a chain mesh weave. Dantin gestures for them all to sit down again.
"How's it going up at the complex?" he asks, drawing up a chair and rubbing the grit out of his short cropped hair.
"We're going to have a problem soon," says Bhattacharya. "The workers know something major's happened, just not what. We're not much better off ourselves."
"There's a naval visit due," offers Makard, sticking to his line.
"I'd have transmitted this earlier," says Dantin, reaching for a capsule held by one of his men. "Like everyone else, we've been having problems with our kit, and now the main site comms units are down."
Bhattacharya knows what he's holding. It's a message capsule, a secure facsimile of a military transburst.
"You'd better tell me what you know," she says.
Dantin holds up the capsule.
"Sent 6 days ago, in system from a naval corvette. Decoded, finally, last night. It's the one and only communication we got from it, and it wasn't meant for us. It was a full-spectrum broadcast aimed at other vessels in the squadron. The contents were relayed from another ship operating a long way out, and after that, the alpha material bears astropathic markers, so this order came in from a distance. We estimate the original was instantiated more than 2 standard months ago, but that's only a guess."
The captain speaks fast, but without hurrying. Bhattacharya thinks he looks tired, though, and wonders if she looks any better.
"There won't be any naval visit, Magister," Dantin says, looking briefly at Makard. "This is a general order to muster, pulling all assets out of the subsector. Somewhere out there, there's a big battle group sucking up all our local units and heading off into the great beyond. They mention Cadia, and they talk about it in the past tense." Past tense.
Bhattacharya lets that sink in. Probably just a mistake in transmission.
"So there's an action planned," she says.
"Maybe. But here's the thing. They were going in cold. This whisper about the Astronomicon, it's not just void chatter. They were crawling through the warp, feeling their way like they were in blindfolds. Never heard them quite so scared about it."
She still doesn't believe that. The Astronomicon is just a part of the universe, like starlight or gravity. It can't be gone.
"We've got a lot of service ships out there still," she says, "and no news of the conveyors."
"They'll all be dead calmed," says Dantin. "Tell them, Vreed."
He invites one of his men to speak, a red-eyed, preternaturally aged wretch with a sanctioned psycho medallion hanging from a scrawny neck.
"You've seen the lights in the sky," Vreed says,
and his voice trembles from weakness. He can hardly keep his hands still. It looks like he might expire any second.
It's not what you think it is. Something's broken. It shouldn't look like that.
Bhattacharya is very tired. She's getting impatient. Tell it plainly, man, she snaps.
The warp, Administrator, says Vreed. Like a local rift effect, but I can't see the end of it. We're on the other side of something, and I can feel it hanging over us. It's like a storm cloud, ready to burst.
Nonsense, says Makard.
What are the effects? Asks Bhattacharya.
I don't know.
Vreed looks miserable.
But I can't sleep. It's been a week now. You must have felt it too, surely.
She has. All of them have. That's what's making them scratchy, unable to focus. She sits forward, locking her fingers together. We're jumping at shadows, she says calmly. There's been equipment failure. Some loose torque on the voxers. We need to keep it together. She swallows. There are so few of us, but the job's important. We supply a lot of worlds. I want recommendations.
Makard doesn't have any, and he looks at his hands. Vreed remains haunted, blinking too often. Dantine speaks.
We've been transmitting standard distress calls on Militarum channels. But here's the truth. No one's coming to help us, not if there's a bigger target to defend. So I say we pull the shutters down, disable the servitors, secure the Leviathans, and get my men stationed at all the complex gates. Get your workers armed, too. We've got the equipment. Some of it's still in the issue crates.
That will prompt panic, at least at first. The bulk of Bhattacharya's staff wouldn't know which way round to hold a lasgun. But he's right. She knows he is. If it comes to it, she says slowly, if something very bad's going down, there's one more thing.
Makard knows what she means.
No,
he says flatly. If we need to, she replies firmly. I was told this when I took the assignment. Protect if you can, destroy if you can't. Nothing for the enemy.
Dantine smiles wryly.
We're not there yet, I hope.
Just as he finishes speaking, there's a hurried rap on the door. A trooper bursts in.
The complex, sir, he says, looking worried. Something's happening.
Bhattacharya feels a little bit sicker. Vreed has started to dribble. There is an air of desperation in the room, far out of proportion to the evident danger. She finds herself wanting to scream.
Sure about that, Captain? Bhattacharya asks, getting up. I think you'd better show us where the armory is.